she did. You see, then she said I could come to work as a typist. And not to say that that was a typist position. She had to make out a case why she wanted me and not somebody else. Yes, because I could only get it if my German was of any value to anyone. Yes, and she said, yes, of course, we had this kind of association and books which needed some German knowledge. The moment she could bring that in, I would get the working permission to work for her. Yes, everyone who had employed me, and I started on as a teacher for languages, and there, of course, my German was needed in French. But everybody else had to make a point why my German was essential, yes? And of course, she automatically did it every year and put it very nicely.
Yes. And your German was actually essential, was it for her, or was it just something she said?
Of course it wasn't. No, yes, it had nothing to do with
it. So you did secretarial work?
No, also her own German was still existent. Yes. She knew some German. No, this was really because she wanted to help. There was no teaching position in London at that time. There was a vacation and so on, and she wanted to help. Poppy knew me. Marjorie Spence knew me. So I started. But then, I mean, that was difficult for her too. I wasn't terribly good. My English wasn't very good, and I wasn't really very good in my shorthand, although my German shorthand was good. It wasn't so good in English. And I made these slight mistakes. Because my English wasn't good, I made mistakes, yes, by or on or at, things like that, went wrong. Couldn't get them down so quickly. She was quite a fast speaker. And she got very, very impatient, yes. And so she stormed up one morning and said to me, oh no, this really won't do. Yes, why do you try it out on me, yes? And then, of course, she was terribly sorry about it. I mean, I was reduced to tears at that stage, and she was terribly sorry about this, and sort of, she'd gone, I mean, she had to go off. She always went off about 10 or 11, she had to leave the house.
And you used to go to Gold's Green, did you?
Yes. Yes. And then she came sometime later that afternoon, she came back and said, please, you know, don't take it to heart, but I think for you it's better to get some more practice and want to work with Marjorie Spence, yes, and we'll have some fluent typist to her whom I can dictate to. Marjorie Spence was the secretary at that time.
Yes.
The secretary involved not only personal secretary, but this two association or any association, but the Association of Education and Citizenship and the Family Endowment Society were both up in Wergeth Road, up at the top floor. Yes, that was the official office.
Yes.
And she was the honorary secretary of both. And although the head was somebody else, like Family Endowment Society was Eleanor Rathbone, she did all the work. Yes. And of course, Eleanor Rathbone was the one that...
You saw a bit of Eleanor Rathbone as well, I suppose.
Not really. I did see her, but no, not really.
Well,
because she never came there. I mean, if Mrs. Havoc wanted her, she went to...
I asked you because she was very good at looking after aliens and going to the camps.
Yes, she was too.
Still,
that's why.
So you then worked really for Marjorie for a
while. I worked for Marjorie for a while until I was a bit better, yes. Marjorie was a... don't know how long she stayed on. She stayed on long after that.
Yeah.
And so, and after that really I took over. I didn't take over position yet. There was another woman first, Mrs. French, but she stood even less long, wasn't really in sympathy. But there, why Mrs. French had to go, I was then her typist, Mrs. Havoc's typist, But there was still a secretary for the two associations, yes? To deal with that, because quite a lot was independent, was automatic work in that, you need somebody responsible for, but you didn't need Mrs. Havoc for it. For instance, I mean, we brought out a magazine which had to be circulated automatically to serve so many colleges and organizations and so on. And a number of those things were sort of fairly automatic. Any inquiry could we have with books, with discussion groups, Jessica and Mrs. French.
Yes,
Mrs. Prince was Mrs. Prince then. And we had then a voluntary work who helped a lot with addressing things. We had a great number of things to circulate all over England, which needed a lot of work packing and addressing, which
so
we did in the office.
Routine work.
And she helped with that. I don't think Mrs. That was Mrs. Berry. She knew Mrs. Berry from the Union times.
Oh, did she?
Yes, yes. And she was an old lady and she was helping and she wasn't paid. She might have got some pocket money, but she was, I mean, her fare was, yeah, the place, but she wasn't paid. And Mrs. French reduced Mrs. Berry to tears one day, yes. And Mrs. Hubbard asked me, well, what's wrong, you know, what's the matter? And I said, well, she, the secretary really is not very nice to Mrs. Berry. She's elderly, she can't be so quick, but, I mean, she doesn't get paid for work either, and she's doing this for work, liked to feel she was doing this for work, too. So I said, oh, well, Mrs. French, what do then? And it was, I mean, that loyalty to Mrs. Berry, whom she knew so long, yes, was greater, really. I mean, if she had been a fantastic woman, which she could have done without, she might have thought a bit longer, but she wasn't in any way special.
Yes.
It was more of a commercial
yes.
kind of woman who took over at that stage.
Yes.
And so Mrs. French had to go after that, and Mrs. Berry stayed. And then I took on the secretary.
Yes.
Then I took on the secretary work.
It's a strange, but I'm sure it will be opposite. Well, thank you.
Yes.
No.
Yeah. And you have asked me what you thought made Mrs. Hubbock tick. And it comes out in Diana's book, too, with the various people who sort of voiced opinions on her. But I think that really was her greatest gift, that she was terribly loyal and very helpful and knew very many people and always made friends wherever she went. She made and kept friends. She had that loyalty that she kept in contact with everybody through her whole life. Starting from university, it went on, only enlarging her circle of friends, yes, through her life, not reducing it. And she made them all work. She hooked them all in certain things, yes. If we needed a reference or something, or an introduction to something, she would think, now, who do I know there? Yes? And she would immediately write a letter of and book that person in for somebody else, yes? To give another, I mean, we, well, helped very, very much because there was friends of her lived in Gilders Green and they evacuated when the bombs fell, yes. There was an empty house and she couldn't see things wasted. She knew Wolf and I were looking for a place. So she immediately writes up to these people who evacuated to Winchester and said, what about your house? Why leave it empty? Why don't you let them stay there? Yes. And so for a minimum rent, we lived in a villa, yes. Which was just fantastic for us at the time. And we paid the garden, we paid the rates, and that was it. And so the house was used. The garden didn't go wild, yes. They didn't have any expenses
so really,
on it.
Yeah.
And she bought, I mean, wherever she saw things which could be used in, would serve several people, she would get down to it and combine it.
That fits in with
yes,
some other
and
people.
Do it,
yes.
And, I mean, the same she had, that was later when, I mean, I left when my son was born. And he was born in 44, and that was flying bomb time. And she didn't think any child should be in London. And she had one of the Welsh cottages, yes, she had
a cottage
in Wales.
Yes.
And she said, why not get a few women there? And, you know, in your position, just go with some friends and stay at the cottage and be out of the way of law, out of London, yes. And so we'll see what's happening, how things go, but stay there. And, I mean, she wouldn't do it for nothing. I mean, she would get a rent from us, but of course, divided by three or four people, that rent was minimal too, again, yes. But, I mean, she wouldn't give things without having, I mean, it would always be very reasonable and leave everybody's pride intact too.
Yes, that's
And it was just she could find out useful combinations, yes, and use them, and would not hesitate to use them.
She was interested in you as an individual.
Very.
Really, what should you think?
Oh, yes, she was. She wasn't everybody's cup of tea. Yes, some people found her too strenuous, especially when you're a typist, yes.
To work for,
she was a driver in a way, yes, because she herself drove. She drove herself so well. And, I mean, she put an awful lot of energy into her day and had the energy and expected everybody else to do the same, really. Very often, ordinary typists who were used to commercial life with cups of tea and so on between and a proper working time, which, you know, we finished early when it was finished. You know, we might go a bit earlier the next day, it wouldn't matter either, yes. But, I mean, if there was a pressure, we finished the work for that day, if it was important, yes. But an ordinary typist wouldn't do it. And once I could put up with her, if she really just admired her, I liked her.
Yes,
I liked energy, but, and Poppy Cohen liked her too. I mean, if she knew we liked her, I mean, she liked her too. Yes,
yes, I understand, yes. She really pushed you then in the sense of she expected you to take shorthand quickly, did she?
How did you notice it, really?
She just...
Well, you see, when you came in the morning, she already had been up for quite some time. Yes.
That's right.
And was ready to start off. And she really had enormous correspondence. She was working on many, either on books or on drafts for the Royal Commission for this and that, mainly with population or change of curriculum that was she always also was connected with. And she collected evidence for the Board of Education. Yes.
Yes,
it was a curriculum question, yes, to have social studies on the curriculum,
yes,
and so on.
Yes.
Nothing, Latin, logical Latin goes over everything, and so on, and it's transferred in every other subject, and so on. And so, she had a lot of work to do, yes, she had to deal with her correspondence, and she had to... and she usually had some other work to do, which she wanted to get down to every day, yes? So, of course, you can say it much quicker than you can type it, yes? So she was not only a fast typer, but she had a lot to type, yes? So you took it all down, and then she would still do her telephones, and you went upstairs and started it off, and then she would give you last minute, usually before she went anywhere, she said, ring them up, tell them I'm on the way. Because she was never punctual, yes. She was always late, yes. We always had to be late.
I've heard that too.
Forgetting last minute things, you
know.
So, according to how important it was, we either were downstairs with, see that she had her bag, her glasses, her hat, and so on, you know. And ready to have last minute instructions, yes. And always the telephone, tell them I'm on the way. And then you had your teamwork to do upstairs for the organizations anyway. There was a lot of telephone calls, yes, and she gave you a lot of ring-ups for that. And so on. You had to get through the correspondence. So there was quite a bit. I wasn't the only one. We always had one or two extra people, yes. We had two typists, usually, and one secretary. Yes. So there was. But the other two typists were only part-time always. Yes. And the secretary was full-time. Yes. But, she was an extremely busy woman. Yes.
Did she let you get on with things yourself? And did she delegate things to you and leave you to do things? Or did you feel she was always supervising you, always interfering?
She wasn't interfering. She knew what was going on. I think she never stopped overlooking the whole situation. But a lot of things which were routine, yes. And once you would You would show them to her, get them ready for her, let her sign them the next day, yes, next morning, but then she would sit where you deal with them. When she knew this was all right, yes.
So she wasn't fussy or she didn't worry you about this particularly?
She wasn't, I mean, she hated to have mistakes, which were your mistakes, yes, silly mistakes. She hated that, yes. She wasn't very, I mean, she would...
She wasn't patient, really.
No. She would be irritated by that. But, apart from any kind of stupid things she couldn't understand, I mean, she was irritated by that, yes, and have no patience about it. But with regard to the work, she didn't really fuss, no. I don't remember. Yes, that's not my memory of her at all. We were very busy, and she would, I mean, if she had to go out later, I mean, she would always call you down again and have many more things to dictate. Yes, she would really get quite bitchy.
So she really was very hard, you think,
Well, I think when we arrived around about 9, and I think she woke up every morning at somewhere between 5 and 6. And she started to read a novel or something. She was keeping up with what was being published now. Yes, then.
Yes.
Then she would have her breakfast and go for a walk and start on, I think she did another hour on theoretical books which came out. Yes. If Kolar or whoever produced a new book, she was reading that too. And then that must have still all been before breakfast. She went, if she wanted to clear her head, she went for a walk on the heath before she started. And then when the postman came, she started on her correspondence. And by the way, when we came, we started off with her correspondence every day, yes, what she'd got.
What about housework and things like that? You didn't see that side of things?
Well, she had a housekeeper.
Yes.
And she had some people in there, up for helping. I mean, she knew my husband had no permission to work at all, and wasn't doing anything, so she found him jobs. So when Mr. Graves moved from, he was somewhere in town, and she wasn't safe in town. He moved out to Goldersgate, which was, relatively much less bond. She got my husband to pick up for him, yes, and help with the extra mover, the move. I think she was paying, so I don't quite know who was paying, but, you know, it was by the hour, and she took my husband, although he's never done anything in this garden in his life. He was her gardener. Well, he cut the hedge and so on. Yes, he did things she told him to do. And she was rather keen on her garden. She loved her garden very much. And so she got him to work there. She had something to do with Winifred Rafferty to some removal or something.
Oh, yes.
She got him,
She got him little jobs.
Little jobs, which helped.
Yes. And of course it helped you establish yourself as a secretary as an addition to your teaching qualification.
I never was a secretary again. I only worked for 5 years. Yes.
So it might have been useful.
Yes, yes.
Was she neat and orderly in her dealing with paper?
She was terribly untidy in a way, yes. But like many untidy people, you still have a sort of order in your tidiness. You still know where things are. And she wasn't, she might look for glasses everywhere, or for her, yes, or for a piece of clothing, but she would know where her letters were, or where her books were, or where her drafts were, and so on. She could put her hand on those really fairly quickly, and she was quite organized in that. And when she was any kind of either the manuscript for the book or the for the commission, the evidence, she would have 20 books around her, which you see a page this, page that, and so on. Yes, little shed them open here, and she was looking, usually found very quickly the places she wanted and would dictate. And she would use quite a bit of formulation which she found in the books. I always felt it wasn't really on her own.
No, she put it together.
She could put it well together, but she used quite a bit of actual formulation from these books. And but then, she made her think everything had 15, 20 drafts, yes, because she changed it and changed it and changed it. And we thought, now this is the last, yes. And actually, she changed the proofs as well, yes, which the publishers must have hated.
That's the Penguin book you're talking about now, are you? Population.
Well, yes. Well, we did other things too. I mean, we had the magazine she was writing,
yes.
and she had, I mean, the proofs came from that. And we did the discussion groups during the war. She did a lot of it for art, I mean,
education. Obviously.
Yeah,
yes.
Forces, education,
yes.
And so on. And she did one of those two, one on population, one how to run discussion groups, yes, with a big book list, which actually we both worked out, you know, together. And that's really, since then, she always said she liked me, but she said no, and I said, typists could have got that book list together as you did. She would, you know, I mean, she would.
She'd give you praise.
She would give you some recognition, not on the whole, but I mean, sometimes.
Yes. She
was doing it, yes. On the whole, she had no time really for it. But it did help her considerably during that time, and I really started New Statesman, and I don't know all the books reviews I could get hold of, yes. And helped her in that respect, really, because I was interested. Also, it was a new thing for me. Wanted something to put my, get my teeth into. And, where are we now, how she worked.
Yes,
you see, with these discussion groups, for instance, too, we had about 20 different booklets. Now, all these people she got to write little... It was for discussion groups, or for the lay people, for a lay person to do, yes. She had all the famous names in there. Glass on population, or Titmus, or
yes.
Sharp on town planning. I mean, she got all the, they were all her friends, really. Yes, she knew them all personally. She said, could you write this? I forget now how many words that was, 20,000 or 10,000. I don't know quite.
Yes.
Yeah, I forgotten. Could you write as a... leaflet for that. There wasn't much money in it. They weren't really. It was a... I mean, they got some money for it, but I'm sure they didn't get much money.
They did it for her, really.
They did it for her, and she got all the famous names in their subjects to write on their subjects for this.
How do you think she gets so many people to do things for her?
She would be prepared to do everything for everybody.
She'd do things to them.
Would. I mean, if somebody was ill, she would not hesitate to travel to Scotland tonight, yes? If it was a good friend and who had... I mean, even if it was somebody who was nobody and they didn't have anybody to look after them, she would do it, yes? I mean, if a housekeeper's mother was ill and there wasn't anybody, and for some reason the housekeeper had, the child couldn't go, she would go. And quite everybody knew it, that, I mean, Mrs. Hubbard would put herself out, too, for everybody, yes.
So it's all mutual.
Also, she was, I mean, everybody, these people, also believed probably in the same things as she did. I think that was the other, I mean, not only on a personal reason,
no.
I think these were all people who, many, of course, whom she met at Cambridge, and, you know, there she was probably, in some group of progressive thinking.
Yes, yes, of course, yes. Mrs. Black and White as well.
Black and White and so on, yes. And,
well, thank you very much.
And I suppose this was probably more important than the personal side. And I think that they were still on the same wavelength.
Yes, that's interesting. Did she down in 1944, so you had to leave. Did she show an interest in your son afterwards? I mean, did she...
Well, she... I really consider her a friend, yes. When she died, you really felt a great loss, you know. You really felt, oh dear, what now in England? You've lost your great protector.
You mean she kept in touch with you all that time, between 1944 and 1949?
It was more, because after the war, when the war was over, I mean, 44 my son was born, but 45 we had to, and we lived still in this little, very near actually, so of course, and she was always interested in children. We had great priority in her life. And of course, when she saw Michael and was very pleased, and she, I think she bought us a pram, I think, and so on. Yes, I mean, when we were so near, of course, she took an interest. But then we had to leave, of course, the villa. Lovely, because the people came back, of course, the war was over, and we really didn't, then it was a bit difficult to find something, yes. After the war, because everybody was coming back, and it was difficult to find, and she bought a house for her daughter in Greenwich, yes, a big house, which had a basement. She said, why not, do you want to go there? So
this was long after you'd ceased to be her secretary.
Well, it was
a year or so one,
yeah, more than a year, yes, and so we moved back.
So she did keep it.
And then I started a nursery there, and I had Diana's daughter, who's called now Andrea, in my nursery, yes. And I looked after Thomas and the children, yes. Diana's
she was very
children.
Fond of those two children, wasn't she?
And she came often to the house, and you always came. And so us as well, yes.
That's very cool.
Yes.
How did you ever have the time to talk about your own affairs if she was so busy pushing you all the time, you know? How did she know what you were doing and what your personal situation was?
I don't know, and no time.
You just mentioned it in passing, and she'd pick it up, would she?
She would pick up anything, yes, personal too. Especially, you see, she didn't have to rush off every day.
No.
Sometimes she had lunch at home, yes. And then we were quite so pushed, yes, and she was quite so pushed.
Yes, so then she took...
But she would, I mean, she would still take in personal interest and answer personal questions in the morning, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes, she was always a human person. I mean, she was never just a slave driver.
Yes.
I mean,
and you felt Margaret Spence felt that too, do you? I mean, I must go and see her, I think, mustn't I? Because she's obviously an important person. But you felt that she liked her as well, did she? Yes. Yes, so really it's because you agreed with her views, partly. Partly because she did so much for you.
Admired her, really.
Yes, because of her energy, really.
Well, and the enormous number of courses she was supporting and doing things for, yes, and being chairman here or speaking there. It was really very, very, the New Education Fellowship was another thing, yes, it was in close contact with, there was a woman called Wolkoff, and in a certain educational or economic. She, her subject really was economics.
She was very interested in education.
Yeah, education, adult or citizenship, or, you know, is a really in the widest sense.
Yes.
And she would support anything connected with us, yes.
Because you must have agreed with her very much in democracy. I mean, you must have hated Hitler as much as she did, and so that must have given you a lot in common. Because she was very strongly anti-Nazi, wasn't she, all through the 30s?
Well, she was half-Jewish. No, she was Jewish.
She was Jewish, but
she wasn't half-Jewish. She married a non-Jew.
That's right.
And with us, with my husband, I had the other way around.
Yes.
He's a Jew, and
yes.
I'm not.
Yes.
And, of course, she has her relations everywhere. And she, as I say, she still knows bits of German because she has... her family originally came from Hamburg.
That's right.
It was a banker's family.
That's quite right, yes.
Yeah.
Did Did she talk German to you at all?
Well, she didn't let on at all, but until my mother came and visited her and visited me, and I wanted to wear my... That was after the war, but I wanted to introduce her to Mrs. Hubbard. Because, I mean, Mrs. Hubbard meant so much to me. And, of course, she would. I mean, she had my little mama. She had time, too. And she spoke German to her because my mother couldn't speak English. And, yeah.
That was the first time you realized she could.
She said, really, you'd never let on.
But you really, when she died, you said she... You thought that your protector had gone. Yeah. He really did look on her as a protector.
Well, we always knew if there was anything, you know, in the war. Studying or something, yes. Mrs. Hubbard would have something good to suggest. Yes, she would give us some introduction somewhere, yes. And actually we were amazed that we didn't need it, in fact, yes.
Still, it was comforting.
But it was, yes, we really felt it was wonderful to know her, yes. And I also felt when I was working for her that I knew we got to know England so well because she knew so many people. And I wrote so many letters to so many people who were in public life all the time, yes, that you really had a very good introduction into English life, yes, yes.
How do you feel she coped with the war? I mean, it must have been very awkward at the time. Like, did she dislike the rationing and the bombs and everything? I mean, did she make a lot of complaints about the war, or what, do you think?
Never.
Another difficult question, isn't it?
Well, rationing she certainly didn't mind. I mean, she lived terribly frugally.
Did she?
Yes, and I'm sure she was one who, like the Queen, had only 5 inches in a bath. I mean, I don't really know, but I'm quite sure. Yes, 5 inches of water. Yeah. Because she would just take those things absolutely seriously, voluntarily do what was suggested, whereas a meaner person would think, oh, well, who knows? She would actually really carry it out.
Yes. You think she's a very disciplined sort of person?
Oh, yes, oh, yes. I mean, the war must have been a tragedy to her. Because, I mean, like wars are, she, I'm sure she was very pacifist thinking.
Yes.
And but, I mean, so must Hitler have been a tragedy to her because of her Jewishness and her... I mean, she had close relations in Belgium, yes. She was still in contact with, really, all the time. I mean, must have worried her very much and... I don't really know everywhere, but I mean, she must have quite a few relations on the continent who had to leave and go and run, yes, and lost everything.
Of course, this, the time when you were there, was when the photographs of concentration camps and things came over, didn't they, and were published in the newspapers. Did that shock her a lot, do you remember? Did she ever say, talk about the concentration camps or say anything about
them? Yes, she did. It wasn't quite, I think, really the main thing came later, yes. And you know these first concentration, I mean, the Guardian bought it and the News Chronicle still. People didn't believe it. But I think she wondered, but there was always a little bit of doubt that it was true, yes.
While you were there anyway, until...
Whether that was with her. I wouldn't be sure, I couldn't take an oath on it. But all these things were doubted so at that time. The
yes.
real truth and the reality of it
yes,
really came till after the war.
Yes.
Yes, when the forces
went in.
Yes. Yes, and up to then, you see, one was so used out wartime propaganda that, and of course this could have been propaganda
course,
too,
yes.
or exaggeration, people couldn't.
Yes.
Really believe, and I wonder whether she. I can't say anything
yeah.
about it.
It's interesting I ask you that because Diana said that she was very depressed about that, and that's one of the reasons why she was very depressed later on in her life. There are other reasons, but that was one reason. Did you feel that she was easily depressed when you met her? I mean, because, see, Diana's biography says quite a lot about how she got
actually did she die?
She died in 49.
49. So I was fairly at the end, really, in 44.
But you always got the impression of optimism,
yes.
Energy.
Yes, and she was a very involved. I mean, she travelled a lot, speaking to the horses too, but discussion groups and so on, yes, and she travelled all over the place, and then she travelled to see friends, and she travelled to her cottage for holidays with her family. She was a lot on the way too, yes, and her day was so full that I never had the feeling there was time for depression, yes. Maybe she was. She was perhaps very lonely.
Well, you see, that's interesting because she used to work so hard, she said, because if she didn't work, she got depressed.
Yeah, well, that happened as well, I believe.
Of course, you wouldn't see that. You wouldn't see that side of her at all.
No, of course, she had lost... I mean, she was without a husband. I don't know about her personal life at all, but she has company in the house. House is always a big bunch of graves there. But I think he died while I was there.
Did that upset her a lot?
Yes. And I don't quite know when that was.
I think about 43 or 4, that sort
just,
of time.
Just passed.
Yes,
I think, because Wolf still, I mean, he knew before I did. Yes. Because he knew Marjorie Springs too.
I see, yes.
Because we were already friends then. I mean, he knew Poppy when I was at school there. And Easter moved graves to Mrs. Hubbock. But I don't remember him being there.
He lived in the house, actually.